Wake up, my dear sinners. Wake up from your deep rest. Won't you say your prayers? Know that you are blessed. I love you, oh, but Jesus loves you the best. And I hope that you choose your own religion.
Howdy, sinners. Welcome to Choose Your Own Religion. I'm Joe. Me and my guest make up a new religion each week. It's great. I'm really excited to have Casey Koop on this week. She's a really funny comedian. I've known her for years. We've gone on lots of hikes together over the years, and we would talk about these spiritual type subjects all the time. So she was one of the first people I immediately thought of that I'd love to have on. Not only is she a funny comedian, she is a pure distillation of wild feminine energy. Like 500 years ago, they would have called her a muse and then locked her in a tower so they could write some 16th century emo song lyrics about her. And we had a great conversation. We talk about some of our issues with substance abuse and sobriety. Casey goes into some detail about her career as a celibate stripper. At least at the time of this podcast, I can't presume to speak for where she is now or when you're listening to this, what she'll be doing. I don't think she intends to be a nun forever. But at least at the time of this podcast, she was celibate. And this conversation actually inspired me to go on a period of celibacy, much to the disappointment, I'm sure, of everybody. It's weird when you make any sort of, when you voluntarily give up something that everybody enjoys. Is it like I think there's an emotional reaction in a lot of people saying like, oh, so you think you think sex is wrong? You hate sex? No. Okay. Nobody gives up chocolate because you hate chocolate. You hate the consequences of a life of liking chocolate too much. You hate the feeling you get when you buy yet another box of off-brand Cocoa Puffs. Choco balls. Now, for me, I've been on a period of celibacy for about 6 weeks now as a way to sort of rein in my own level of tantra. You know, I was letting my freak flag fly for a while, and I still itch to take that flag out of the drawer, unfold it, and hoist it again, annoy everybody with it flapping around in the wind. The answer isn't to keep it in the drawer forever. It's to find that middle ground, find that middle way. It's annoying how much stuff it feels like Buddha was right about, the middle way. I'm pretty sure Buddha said, flirt, but don't be creepy. Right now, I'm not taking a middle ground position as a way to try to balance it out. I do think prudes and hedonists are sort of at odds with each other unnecessarily. I think both sides believe that the other side doesn't really get sacred sexuality. You know, I think both are valid ways to pursue that. I think, you know, both are just trying to arrive at some place of freedom and a dissolution of the self. If you're a full-blown hedonist, or if you are no sex until marriage, and even then only when you want your nephews to have cousins, you're both trying to make some statement about the greatness of sex. Whether it's a well-thought-out, dignified, old-school conservatism, or you just have a dogged pursuit of excellent sex, they're both paths to freedom. But aside from any pseudo-lofty reason, another reason I'm taking a break from sex right now is I got kids to feed. They just haven't been born yet, nor do I want to give birth to them anytime soon. So anyway, I'm happy to have you guys listening to me and Casey talk about stand-up, sex, stripping, the spirit. For you audiophiles out there, I do apologize again for the quality on this. Second episode ever recorded, still figuring some things out. It's mostly fine. There's a couple of moments where it sounds like I'm playing skee ball in a concrete mixer or throwing a raccoon in with the rest of my whites, but it's a good enough conversation. I still wanted to release it. And as for the religion we come up with, I'm still trying to figure out how to properly exploit the gimmick of my show. But, you know, I thought we came up with a great one. And you'll probably disagree and nitpick with a lot of the spiritual things we say or the religious tenets we go by. Well, that's great. That's the point. There are so many paths up the same mountain we're all trying to go up, and we all need a different set of maps and directions depending on where we're starting. So I hope you disagree on stuff and tell me why. I'm really, again, excited to release this. Please, if you like it, subscribe. Follow me on iTunes, Stitcher, like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. please welcome Casey Koop, and please join me in saying a phrase that I am determined to turn into a religious catchphrase, Ja Rule.
Okay, so anything you need to let me know beforehand? Any sound checks you need to do?
No, I did all the sound checking stuff. We should be fine. I don't know, maybe...
It's, you don't know how loud I am, Joe.
That is true.
I'm just kidding. I'm not.
You just talk at that volume the entire time.
Okay, cool. I have so many ideas to tell the world.
I mean, we've talked a lot. I love our relationship that we talk about spiritual stuff. Anyway, it's partially why I was so excited to
even
have you.
Even from, like,
on.
Day one.
Really from day one. Even in the
Liquid
Zoo.
In the atheist days for the both of us.
Yeah,
kinda.
Right? Yeah.
I think that's because we're not heartless. We have a lot of heart. There's a lot of heart happening.
There is a lot of heart happening. I couldn't remember exactly what your, like, religious upbringing, if you had any or anything like that. Like, did you have any kind of spiritual background, as a kid, or?
More so the community I lived in than my personal, like, family. But my family and I, when we were real little kids, we lived in Nebraska in, like, a tiny little town for, like, 2 years when I was, like, 4 years old. That town was Seventh-day Adventist. So my parents sort of just glommed onto that because it was a little tiny town, very, very religious, and they're like, let's give the kids some moral compass, right?
Aren't they the ones who don't celebrate anything? Like, they're anti, like, birthday parties?
Honestly, I don't really remember.
I think I know
you
that.
Go to church on Saturday, you don't eat pig, you don't eat lamb.
But cows are cool.
On the Sabbath, you don't really move much. You just kind of sit there. I didn't really understand that, but my dad would watch golf, and I felt like my brain was dying.
Yeah. I kind of like the concept of a Sabbath. Like, that's the
now
least...
I do, now that I'm old and tired all the time.
I know, right? Like, I kind of like the idea of, like I guess it's originally a Jewish thing, right?
Yeah. It's like now I know that. I didn't know that as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the idea of, like, forcing you to not work. Like, God's like, no, don't work. Like, you can't do anything.
Whoever made that up is a genius. But as a little kid, you're like, God damn it.
Why can't I just drive somewhere?
I just want to do something. Yeah. I'd, like, play on the floor and be so bored. So we did Seventh-day Adventist, went and then moved to Oregon when I was, like, 5 or 6.
Uh-huh.
And continued that religion until, like, age, like, 13. And then none of us in my family spoke about it, but we all just stopped going to church and didn't...
That's interesting.
We didn't say anything because, like, I think all of us didn't really like it, my parents included. But, like, they had just gone through the motions of it so that we wouldn't be, like, sent to hell.
Right. Like, nobody's feeling it, but nobody wants to be the first one to be like, guys, I don't know about this, this God stuff.
And me and my brothers never, like, said to our parents, why aren't we going to church? We just sort of, like, shut up because, like, church is so boring when you're a kid.
Yeah.
And all the kids there were, like, they went to Seventh-day Adventist school in Oregon, and they just stared at us like outsiders because they had these weird little outfits, and we were just, like, random kids that were there. And, like, me and my brothers would just sit, and we were cynical little kids. We were cynical children, and we just, like, made fun of everyone there. So, I mean, I had a vague Christianity up until I was, like, 17, 18.
Yeah. And then college, like most of us.
The atheist years.
Like, oh, I don't have to go anymore? Sweet. Not gonna go.
Or just, like, growing up in Oregon even was, like, a very religious town that I grew up in. Canby, Oregon. And a lot of people were super evangelical, or they were Catholic, Mormon, or Russian Orthodox were the heavy...
Mm.
It was a little town, and everyone was some super religion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I hated the pressures of that, the way people were so... The Christian kids were the popular kids, and they were super mean.
Hmm.
And, like, the cool place to hang out was youth group, but it was, like... It had, like, 40-year-old dudes who were trying to be teenagers. I was like, what the hell is this?
Like the youth pastor, like the people hanging.
Yeah.
And were the, whatever, like, the peripheral, like, advisors.
Yes.
Like the, yeah.
And so, where I'm from, the cool kids are the Christian kids. Like that movie Saved.
Yeah, yeah.
That was how I grew up. And so, by 18, by senior year of high school, my best friend and I started rejecting that. And we were, like, going to be atheist. And we thought we were so cool. And we were kind of cool in that because everyone else was religious.
And you were you still going to youth group at that time? Like, you were while you were rebelling?
I'd only gone a few times because my friends would tempt me with free pizza. And like, who's going to turn out free pizza?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm like, course, I'll take a little God with my pizza.
Sure, yeah. The free food is a good, great bribe all across the board. Yeah. I remember in my youth group, there was always a couple kids who were like, you could tell were like, they would never talk about it openly because that would just be like too abrasive. But like, you could tell they were sort of like not that into the whole thing. They were just kind of there. Their parents made them. It's always an interesting dynamic.
Or just like a lot of kids trying to go along with the cool kids by like, oh, youth group's where it's at. Like, it was known for, like, oh, you could go hide somewhere and make out with someone at youth group. Like, youth group's where you got action.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how twisted it was.
Yeah. No, it's very true. Unless you're the pastor's kid, and then... See, I had a weird thing where, like...
Oh, you're a pastor's kid.
Yeah, like, everybody...
I'm very close with a couple pastor's kids throughout my life, actually. Very close.
I mean, we're either saints or devils,
or a nice healthy mix of both, like you.
Right. I like to think so, I guess. I don't know. I've been more of one or the other at various points in my life. I've been too much of a saint for sure sometimes.
But then you like slid into the devil's side a little bit,
bit too much. It's all mixed up, man.
In Canby, in Oregon, where I grew up, the block I lived on, all the kids I lived next to were like religious upbringing kids. A lot of my friends growing up had super religious upbringings. Like, they weren't allowed to read Harry Potter kind of upbringings. Like,
wow.
So I was around that a lot, and my best friends were the two girls lived next door, and they were the pastor's daughters. Like, I lived right next door to a pastor and his children. And so between the two daughters, one was the angel, one was the devil. And I was I'm close to both of them.
Yeah.
One of them was the rebel, one of them was the good, perfect child. Yeah. And I saw how being the pastor's daughters affected their lives, because I was like their third sister. Like, I was like the weird kid next door that always hung out with them or went on little family trips with them, because they were like so much more loving than my family. AKA they had like baked goods in their home. Their mom made. They had like love in their home, but their life wasn't perfect either, but I definitely experienced a lot of that pastor's kid stuff firsthand.
Yeah.
Strangely.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, too, like, that just idea of, like, the devil in all of us. And, like, I don't know, one thing, like, devil obviously has a pretty evil connotation behind it, right? But there is something, like, okay, I've been thinking about this. I can't remember where I was reading about it. Just, like, the idea of, like, you know, Satan was originally an angel, right?
And he's kind of like a rebellious
angel. And I think...
That's so cute.
In a way, like, I don't know, just the idea of, like, trying to embrace the devil in you but not letting him run the show can be a really good thing in terms of, like there's a healthy anger, there's a healthy anarchy when, like
acknowledging the devil.
Or the devil works, like, the devil being, like, this force of destruction, right? This force of, like, needing, like, wanting to tear things down. Well, if you channel that towards tearing down things that maybe should be torn down, like power structures and various things, then that's a way... That's a sneaky way that, like, you could say, if you were thinking in a classical Christian structure, like, that's a way God actually can use the devil.
Interesting. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Like God's even in control of the devil.
Yeah, well, it's like, because, I don't know, when I try to demonize my dark sides, I get into more trouble
that way.
That's
bad for all of us. That's interesting. I mean, I think we did talk about recently how we've both come back to our own spirituality in our own way. I still don't know what my higher power is. I just know that I'm praying again.
Yeah.
And I need that. And I used to be so cynical these last, 8 years, ever since I went to college. You know, became a grown-up. And then the last 3 months, I got sober. And just going back in my spiritual journey again.
Yeah.
And I still don't know what my God is, but... God is something.
Yeah.
God is present. Like you said, destruction, like, without any prayer, without any spiritual, like, ties anymore, I was just all destructive. Self-destructive. Yeah. Outwardly destructive. And like you said, I think outwardly destructive can be good. Like, I mean, I protest against, like, the police, you know, or other power structures.
Yeah.
But when you're self-destructive on top of that, you can't be effective in anything you do.
Totally. And that was one thing I wanted to ask you, too, because you know, you've been going through the the program, Bill's friends. And I know part of that, one of the steps, because I've been to a couple meetings myself long ago. I'm vaguely familiar with it, but like, what is, if you don't have a specific higher power right now, what do you use in this part of that, or do you, have you?
It's weird because I mean, where I'm at, it's just at this point, all it encompasses is, well, it's a she and it is tied to nature. So for me, it could be Mother Nature right now, but I know it's more than that.
Yeah.
I just don't feel the pressure to define it fully yet.
Yeah.
Because I think my higher power will make itself clear in time. I just don't feel like I have to read every book on Buddhism or on... I don't feel that pressure to research every religion and, like, make a cocktail of religion for me.
Oh, man, because that is exactly what I feel.
I know, but you grew up with, like, a distinctive spirituality. Like, a distinctive religion.
Like, specific form.
Mine was more vague.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're wronging someone or something when you don't know what you believe in?
You know, that's interesting. I think, yeah. Well, this is like such a, I would say a running theme in my life is uncertainty and dealing with it in a world where it seems like most people are pretty certain of their own opinions.
Yeah,
and their own
thing. Why are people so certain?
I don't know.
Why are they so certain they're atheist? Why are they so certain they're agnostic? Why are they so certain they're Christian? I don't know.
And that's like something that I think has like held me back in some ways. Cause like, I don't know. It's hard for me. I can always play, not to use the phrase, a devil's advocate. I can always play the other side of whatever it is. I can always, like, whether, and it's
that's healthy,
but like sometimes it seems like I'll like be on a good path and then I'll be like, oh, this, and I'll like self-sabotage it. So I don't know. It's,
how are you doing in terms of self-sabotage as of late? Because I feel like the last year you've gotten so much better, like healthier, happier. How is self-sabotage for you now and in relation to your religious, like, thoughts at this
point?
Sure,
yeah. I mean, I think in some ways it's like there's, because there's so many dimensions of our lives, right? There's, you have like your physical realm, your spiritual realm, your social realms, and whatever. In some ways, I've definitely gotten better at like not self-sabotaging, like recognizing a good thing and like continuing to try to contribute towards that. In other ways, I don't know. I feel like definitely, I was looking in the mirror this morning, definitely added a couple LBs from where I used to be. So, because, like, I know, like, there's a weird part of me that's just like, yeah, it's, like, with certain areas of discipline, you just fall off, and I don't know. But that helps me at least have, it's weird when, like, when you are, like, killing it at life a little bit, you know, when you're just, like, on such a great certain path, sometimes that's when, like, your self-righteousness comes into play, and you're like, you get cocky, you get, like,
I can see judgmental. That, but I'm going to say I can't relate to it, because for me, when things are going great for me, I get overwhelmed with fear, because that doesn't feel familiar.
Yeah.
I'm the kind where, like, if things are going well, I will sabotage it, because I'm so scared. I'm so comfortable with destruction and bottoming. It scares me when things are going well. I don't get self-righteous. I get, like, oh, I'm going to fuck this up.
Yeah.
So things are going well right now in terms of sobriety, my own inner peace, comedy. I'm just working really hard at it. I don't know if it's going well. I'm working hard at it.
Yeah.
But I get scared sometimes that it's all going to be gone in an instant. That's such a scary thing when things are going well.
Especially because it feels like it's
foreign.
And it's so much easier to destroy and break. Yes. It takes, like, It can take so long to build trust in a relationship, and that trust can be destroyed in an instant, and it takes, like, I had a relationship a couple years ago where we had built up such a strong trust, and then, like, you just say one sentence, one, like, poorly timed sentence, and all of a sudden the trust just, like, crumbles in an instant, and it takes, like, we're fine now, me and that ex, but it took a while to, you know, build back up that.
Yeah, I'm really scared of good things.
I don't trust them.
I don't trust them. And that's like trust in yourself, too.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I think what I'm learning about having a higher power and having a stronger sense of spirituality is simply to not make yourself be the higher power.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, I was so married to that phrase, no gods, no masters, for the last 8 years of my life, since I turned 18.
Yeah.
No gods, no masters. Fuck y'all. Fuck y'all trying to control me. Yeah. And I still am. I mean, my inner devil is still strong in that way. No, you know, I don't want you to tell me what to do, tell me what to say, how to dress.
Yeah.
So I'm still, like, super, like, no gods, no masters. But also, like, wait a second. There was... I made myself be the master. And I fucked everything up.
Yeah.
So I think, like, relinquishing control a little bit is a big part of spirituality. When people look at it on the outside, I think they say... Religion is about you're worshiping this guy who's pretending to play God, right? Mm-hmm. Which is like a pastor or preacher or whatever. But really, it's like, then you just turn to worshiping yourself.
Yeah.
And
you can't be, it's hard to. Yeah.
You can't be your own God. I mean, self-love is important, but self-worship will kill you.
Yeah. I was reading Sam Harris recently, who's an atheist, and but he just came out with a book, I guess a year ago, on spirituality without religion, and it's called Waking Up. And
interesting.
That's one thing he talked about, like, his personal definition of spirituality is just realizing that, like, there are other conscious, like, it's a simple thing. It's just, like, there's other people outside of you. You are not the entire world.
Yes.
And they have equal value
to
you. Like, we're all in this together. And that's one way where, like, yeah, the ego wants to super control things and wants to manipulate and wants to, like, be the center of attention. Like, is okay with harming other people for its own sake. And creates all the separation from that feeling.
You just made me realize, like, oh, that's an interesting thing you just said. Because oftentimes when we say, oh, it's good to have religion because it gives a moral compass, other people argue that, like, why wouldn't you have a moral compass without religion? Which I think you definitely can have. Mm-hmm. A lot of us do have a moral compass outside of having religion.
Definitely, yeah.
But removing, like... Or if it's just your ego is your God, then, like, that's where the morals go out the door. Like you just said, like, you're just acting selfishly.
Yeah.
Where in terms of, like, you're hurting others.
And you're totally right with that. Like, it's interesting. I never thought of it in the way you described it about how, I guess, but a lot of people's conception of religion is, like, worship. Like, they think it's, like, worshiping a pastor or worshiping a guy, which is a form of idolatry in a way,
yes.
right? Like, holding one person up who ironically is, like, trying to tell you, like, in a good version of that,
in the best world version of that.
Yeah. And I mean,
that there's an actual God.
Yeah. And despite all my differences with Dad, I think he's pretty good at,
oh yeah, at your
being
dad's
that way. He's actually, he's one of the good ones. I think. Even though I don't agree totally with a lot of things, but
well, you're not a sociopath, so I trust your dad's okay.
he's all right. but yeah, it is it's tough when, like, it seems like humans have this need to have a leader, though. Like, it seems like without any kind of leadership,
human nature is like that.
Yeah, and I think one thing that I've come around on with religion, and part of, like, why I like this idea of this podcast is, like, just the idea of, like, religion as a useful tool, and, like, it has helped a lot of people, and I think providing some sort of, like, structure and community and, like...
Exactly. Okay, so here's where that argument comes in. The reason, like, I was so anti-religion these last 8 years was because I grew up in a town where I saw how religion could be so destructive, and, like, I just saw people and their flaws using religion to, like, justify their shitty actions.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I didn't... And when people make the argument, well, religion gives you a moral compass, I was like, screw that. You should have morals and, like, and act with integrity without religion.
Yeah.
Which I still think. But what I've realized religion or spirituality or just, like, groups can give to you, or spiritual groups, is the sense of community and selflessness that I did not have before.
Mm-hmm.
That is a gift. That is a gift. Like, to meet other people in a surrounding that isn't booze-centered, that's maybe, like, spiritually-centered, maybe that's a healthier way to meet people. Have real friendships that aren't contingent upon how high you can get together, and then how right. much you can relate when you're high on whatever drug.
Yeah.
Right? Like, yeah. having a community, it's, like, not just a moral compass. It's really a community that's, like, healthy.
Shared values, you know, shared, like, principles. Like, that's a, whenever, when a church is good, like, when it's feeling right, it's, like, when you genuinely feel like other people are willing and able to sacrifice little selfish things for the greater good, for each other.
That feels good when you're all contributing of yourself, you know, be it like bringing a dish to something.
Yeah.
Or maybe just like calling somebody when they feel down, or knowing that you have people to call when you feel down. Before, when I was like getting real fucked up a lot, I just didn't want to talk to anyone, and I didn't think there was anyone I could talk to.
Yeah, same here. I've been there.
God, right? Right? Yep. And you're like, oh, screw everybody. Yeah, fuck everyone. Fuck gods. But, like, it doesn't have to be that way. It can just be a community that's healthy.
Yeah.
And if there's, like, a couple bad eggs, which there are in any group ever,
mm-hmm.
stay the fuck away from those people.
Right.
That's what I do. It's like, oh, you give me a bad vibe? I'm not going to talk to you.
Yeah.
But I'm going to talk to these other 10 people who genuinely could have a concern for my life.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally. It's, and I think, you know, there's so many different, like, best case scenarios where you could like it never works out perfectly that way, but just like, you know, that it seems like some of us have like lost the capacity to want to like disagree with each other, like work out disagreements while not demonizing that person. It seems like a lot of like we get in this mode of like, well, we disagree on this thing, so like fuck that person forever. Instead, but like, because we don't
I watch a lot of people just agree with each other. I watch that a lot.
Just happen. To avoid confrontation.
Yeah.
I am so guilty of that. So guilty of that.
What I'm learning now, actually, this is funny, because my New Year's resolution this year was to stop lying. Hmm. And I'm not a compulsive liar, but what I do is I agree with people or nod my head yes when I mean no.
Mm-hmm.
Just little, like, you know, go along with something. And I like to think, like, I've always been, like, a strong-willed person, but I know I do a lot of just, like, white lying. Just like, yeah. Oh, yeah, it's great. But I'm learning to just to disagree and, like, not even be mad about it. I'll just be like, I'll be like, that's your opinion, I respect that. I'm not gonna say, fuck your opinion, I disagree with it.
Yeah.
But it feels good to not just, like, be such a people-pleaser that I'm agreeing with shit I don't agree with.
Totally.
Just comfortable disagreements.
That's something a pastor friend of mine, Ed Bacon, over at All Saints in Pasadena, he talks about, like, just the idea of candor, like, and being honest, but, like, the trick is to do it in a loving way, not to be abrasive, not just to, not to do it to, like, to assert yourself in a, like, in a bad way, or like in a dominant
like
type
I'm
of way.
Better than you, I know more than you way.
Right, just
which
this
happens.
Yeah, oh, it's so easy for all of us to fall into that. But then mm-hmm. when you it's so like so funny how often like I'll be like picturing this tough conversation in my head. I need to have, like, I feel like I need to have somebody, like, something that's gone unsaid, and I'm like, oh, I just want to tell them.
I know!
But then, like, and then the few times, most of the time, I end up never having it. That is such a tragedy, and I would love to adopt, like, steal your resolution and have more of those honest conversations, because it's funny that the couple of, like, the times I do have those, you know, you just like, all right, I gotta be honest, blank. A, they usually take it better than I pictured them taking it.
Oh, yeah. They always take it better than I ever pictured. Because I'm such a people pleaser that I'm so afraid of people not liking me.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, if I tell them how I really feel, they're going to, like, disown me. But oftentimes, they'll just nod and be like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
And then it's like you're...
It feels better.
It just feels... Like, you're moving forward, like, you're making real progress in that relationship, and it's not just,
mm-hmm.
when you don't address things that are bothering you, you sort of are, like, letting that relationship die, versus you think, like, I don't know, in my head, I think, mm-hmm. like, well, this is the way to preserve the relationship is by not bringing it up. And yeah, there's, like, some things that are just not worth, there are some true, very minor things that's like, don't bring those up. But like...
The kind of white lies that I think are okay is like, if someone's feeling really insecure, like, does this dress look good? Sure, yeah. Yeah. You know, I think that's okay. I do, I think that's okay.
Or if they take the last cookie, and you're like...
I wanted that cookie.
Yeah, they never ask. It's like, oh, you didn't even ask?
But it's like, whatever, you'll move on. Right. It's not a big deal.
Right.
Okay, something else interesting we were talking about was how you said... disagreements can often be that I'm better than you mm-hmm. tone, where you're like, I'm going to disagree because I'm going to shut them down and prove them wrong, right?
Yeah.
That's how my atheism started. It was that sense of, like, self-importance, I'm smarter than you, I'm cynical, mm-hmm. you all are sheep. Which is ironic because Jesus and his sheep. But I guess that's where that saying is from. But, so... to actually, like, be like, hey, like, my atheism was actually just more of an agnostic thought. Like, but I just wanted to say the word atheist so I sounded more badass than you, more fearless, because if I die, I'm godless. Whatever. Like, I'll accept whatever fate I have. Because I'm so cool and so smart.
Oh, yeah. I've had so many versions of those things running through my head, too. It's so funny.
And so now, and to embrace the more agnostic, more, like, unsurety, or is that's not a word.
Uncertainty?
Uncertainty.
Unsurety should be a word.
I know, it's kind of cute. It's got a ring to it. To embrace the uncertainty of a higher power and spirituality is so much more, has so much more humility in it, right?
Yeah.
It's like... oh, I really don't know. And that's, like, scary to say because I know everything and I'm a know-it-all.
Yeah.
I'll know everything better than you, right?
Yeah.
So, to just be 26, turning 27 soon, years old, and to say, I'm not really sure about my higher power, but I'm going to admit that I think there's one.
Yeah.
That's, like, the most humility I've had in a long time.
You know, Richard Rohr, who's he's a Christian, like, thinker. I think he's Catholic. He's a Catholic or Episcopalian, one of the really formal ones. But he has this idea, he's like, you know, the idea of like, God and, like, mystery. It's like, mystery isn't something that is, like... we don't know that we'll one day find out. It's like something that's like infinitely unknowable. And like, that's kind of what I feel like God, whatever God is, it's like, just like the humility that like, we're never going to know all of this. We're never going to see every side to everything. We're never going to know it all.
Absolutely no way.
Like we just can't know it all. I mean, like none of us can read all the books that are out there. No. None of us can.
And you've read a lot of them, Joe. You're like ahead of the game on all that.
Half of these in my apartment. Well, yeah, like half of these I haven't read, but
half you always reference religious books, and I'm like, God damn it, Joe's so smart. I want to be on his level.
it's not all it cracks up to. It's cracked up to be sometimes.
I just feel like your status as a pastor's kid is so wild in your journey for God.
It's weird because that's something I wish. I just wish I could like had a direct experience other than that though, because it's like that. This is the only time I've never known a time in my life that I wasn't a pastor's kid. Like mm-hmm. I've never known what it's like to be, and I am the vast minority of human beings in that way. And so and one thing that I think there's a couple things that have thrown me off that it took me a while to realize. I think in some ways it's like you feel entitled to love in a way you didn't realize because like everybody is nice to you as a pastor's kid growing
up. Exactly. Oh my God, that's what I was saying. Nice instantly. That's what I was saying about my two neighbor girls and watching how sort of fucked up it was because we lived next door to them, right? And you juxtapose my household where everything is screaming and yelling, semi-violent, lots of tempers, scary. I was scared a lot in my household. I go next door to their house and there was an eerie silence there all the time. And it wasn't even quite tranquil. It was just almost like things were going unsaid in their household. And it felt eerie to me. Hmm. I liked their household. But going from my tumultuous household, like with screaming and fighting and fear and temperaments, to their household, which was just eerie silence all the time.
Whitewashed.
And like, yeah, the stay-at-home mom who didn't really speak much. It was like night and day, and then watching the people of the church come over, bring them gifts, bring them food, sit with them for dinner, talk with them, and just they'd always look at the pastor's daughters and give them compliments and tell them how great they're doing in school and how beautiful they are. And I was like, that also gave me a bad taste in my mouth for religion, because I saw my household where shit was real. Shit was hitting the fan.
Yeah.
There was nobody coming over and telling me I was beautiful and that I'm doing a great job. But yeah, they'd come over to the pastor's daughter and just, well, in my mind, spoil them rotten.
Yeah.
And then when those girls would act bratty, I'd be like, damn, these girls are spoiled, you know? Like, they were my friends, but I was like, they have a skewed outlook on life.
Yeah.
And I kind of felt bad for them in some weird way.
Well, and yeah, as an adult now, I think some portions of, like, some emptiness I've felt over the past couple years has been, like, it's just realizing, because I didn't have to do anything to earn love. And I don't think humans should have to do anything to feel loved or... But I just had, like, more than most people. Like, I just... It didn't, like... I don't know, I think some people can feel motivated by, like, the lack of that, or they, I don't know, they have to work harder.
Oh, yeah,
it pushes you. Like,
I mean, everything I've always been a severe overachiever, because I just wanted my mom to love me. I wanted somebody to say, you're good enough.
Yeah.
And so, when you have a deficiency of love, you can do a whole lot of shit, let me tell you what. But, I mean, that's not necessarily a good thing. I still, you know, struggle a lot with needing and wanting to be loved, and the things I've gone to get a perceived sense of love. It's really dangerous, but I see what you're saying, how, like, you just get complacent.
Yeah.
In a bad way.
Yeah, and then when all that stuff is removed, when you're in Los Angeles, you know,
half
the other side of the country away from North Carolina, and you did, like, and it's the stand-up world or the improv world, too, just the entertainment business in general, where it's like, well, put up or shut, like, you have to earn any kind of, like, love you get. People are not just going to, like, love you for the sake of loving you.
Yeah.
For the most part. Yeah. So then it's, like, such a vacuum. It is a stark difference there. But that's my own shit still working through.
That's really interesting.
One thing, we can edit this part out. I don't know how. You talk about it a lot on social media, though, so I think it's okay. I'm curious how, like, stripping and sexuality play into your sense of spirituality.
So. Yeah, you know, it's funny to me, because, like, I don't know. I've always had such a big sense of humor about, like, everything I've ever done. I always make fun of myself. My whole life, I was, especially when I was younger, super self-deprecating.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. I find humor in it. I find humor in the irony of the fact that when I started stripping was not long followed by the fact that I found spirituality. Because I think, like, oh, God, I'm such, like, a cliche. The, like, God-fearing stripper, right?
Right.
It is a cliche. It's like a... You know, like, backwoods Kate, you know, just praying to the Lord before she goes, works the pole. But, you know, it's...
Such an interesting...
I just, like, laugh at myself because I'm like, God, am I this, like, weird cliche of, like, I'm a stripper and I believe in God. Like, but, like, also, my sense of God isn't, like, a Christian God. It's the God that I choose, which is more love, more of nature... Because I've always found solace and peace in nature, and I grew up in it. So, like, an earthy kind of God, not a traditional God. And my sexuality is something you know very well that I have spent the last 8 years, you know, ever since going to college, like, exploring and becoming comfortable with. And then for a short time, exploiting. I do not think I'm exploiting my sexuality anymore. When I started stripping 6 months ago, when I was starting to hit some real rock bottoms in my life, on a personal level, on a drug and alcohol level, on a having sex for validation level, that's when I would say I was exploiting my sexuality, because I wasn't happy and I started to only think that my worth was in my sex.
Mm-hmm.
And now, these last 3 months of sobriety and just, like, learning to love myself. God, like, I love my job. Like, every time I go to work, I'm so stoked to be there. All the girls I work with are, like, my best friends. And it's not this cliche you see in movies and TVs, which is a man's perspective of strip clubs, which is all the girls are sad, all the girls are on heroin, all the girls catfight. I mean, there's, like, certain small levels of that. But overall, the locker room is filled with laughter and teasing, and it's like being, like, little girls again.
Oh, that's awesome.
Our sexuality is, like, such a fun thing for us, and we play, and we, like, shake our butts on each other. And it's just like, I feel like I've reached like this point where I'm like, actually, I can like 100% say I'm so comfortable and happy in my sexuality. I haven't had sex for 3 months either in my sobriety. And I almost broke that the other day. But I want to, can I candidly say why? Yeah. It's kind of fucked up. Can I admit this?
I hope you do, yeah.
So I almost had sex for money. A guy offered me $3,000.
Dang.
And he wasn't ugly.
Wow.
And I told a bunch of friends this, and I'm so lucky and blessed, actually, because I have the best friends in the world, and no one judged me for it. Of course, I didn't do it, but, like, that's actually how comfortable I feel in my sexuality, because I don't know. I didn't feel like it was even exploitative. Like, I'm like, he's kind of cute. I like his personality.
Yeah.
I would have sex with him for money. Wow. Is that weird?
No.
I just feel that comfortable with myself and my sexuality and happy. I feel genuinely happy on the inside.
That what's crazy to me is that you didn't, because, like, as somebody who will never be offered sex or offered money for sex, I'll never have that feeling. The idea of being paid $3,000 for that
yeah.
I don't know. This being doesn't know how he would turn down $3,000.
Well, that's amazing. I didn't want to, like, get arrested in case it was a cop, so.
Oh, sure. He was, like, cute but too clean-cut looking. Maybe
it's
not.
Always like, I don't want to lose my job, I don't want to go to jail. But if we're talking in a hypothetical sense here, I would have done it.
Yeah.
And if I was still, like, where is that? 4 months ago when I was just starting stripping and I was still using.
Yeah.
I definitely would not have had sex for money, but that's because I felt so sad. I felt like I was starting to define myself by my job. Mm-hmm. But now that, like, I don't know. I just feel happier. I think spirituality and just, like, having humility of myself, not thinking I'm God anymore.
Yeah.
I just feel better about myself. And I think taking a break from sex has been really good for me. I don't know if I can last a full year. That was my goal.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel just, like, tenfold more comfortable and happier with my sexuality.
That's great.
Yeah, it's crazy. And I'm not doing anything I don't want to do. Like, I haven't given any guys blowjobs because I don't really want to do that right now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's absolutely, I think, a connection between, there can be sacred sexuality, no question about it. And I think that's what's been damaging. I mean, people have talked about this ad nauseum about, like, Christian oppression and, like, that being an ultimately damaging thing, like, trying to oppress sexual desire instead of, like, support it in a more honest way, and, like, the whole Puritanism, like, history of this country having
that's
effect
how I grew
on our
up.
Psyche.
I was so, even as a little girl, I was, like, you hear stories like this of some, even boys, too, like, little kids who feel their sexuality strongly. Ever since I was a little kid, I was masturbating. I didn't know I was doing it, but I was. And so I just repressed all of that until I got to college. I felt strong sexuality all the time. I was, like, wet all the time. I was really, really horny my whole life.
Yeah.
But I repressed it because of that religious town I grew up in. I was scared of it. I thought it was bad. And then when I went into my sexuality these last 8 years, I dove in, and then I went too far.
Mm-hmm.
Something you said a long time ago when we went on a hike sticks with me to this day.
Wow.
Which, oh, it's crazy. Because I think about it all the time in every facet of my life, which is 2 steps forward, 1 step back. And I've done that so many times. With my sexuality, it was like 3 steps forward, 2 steps back. Because I was just like getting to the point where I was like fucking everybody, and I was not happy, and it was dangerous.
Yeah.
And I was just doing it for validation.
Yeah.
And it felt bad. And then I'd get fucked up so that I could do it more. And so, yeah, I'm 2 stepping back right now.
Yeah. That's great to hear how you're... it's flattered to hear something like that was reflected back at me. I'd forgotten I'd said that. I wish I could have remembered my own advice.
Joe, you're like my God.
Well, that's... that might explain your religious problems right there. It is... I feel like I give out better advice than I take myself sometimes. I don't know.
Don't we all? It's so much easier to give advice.
Yeah.
Let's choose a religion.
Well,
oh god.
Choose your own religion. So, I told you a little bit about it. So we're gonna walk through each step.
Oh lord.
This is gonna be fun. Okay, let's just start off with the basics. I think based on our conversation, I think we'll have a lot of these answers anyway. So, okay, if we're going to make up a religion, right? A religion for Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not about Casey.
No.
I guess, like, we have to pick our gods. So, let's say, I mean, assuming I'm not the god, okay, of your religion, I don't think we actually want me as the god.
No.
What is, in your mind, like, if you had to create a religion from scratch, would you want there to be no god? Do you want it to be one god? Do you want, like, little gods over, like over certain areas of things?
I feel like I would just say one god because that's how I've been brainwashed to, like, view a god.
Yeah.
So I'll just say one because it's easier for me to comprehend.
But a god that we can't understand, right? Like, a god...
A god I can't fully understand at all.
Yeah. So, like...
But a singular one.
What do you think would be, like... would be like an overarching, do you have like an overarching ethos or like a,
it would have a lot of femininity tied to it, aka a woman's presence, a motherly, womanly figure.
Mm-hmm.
One of just like strength and support and like, I want to say beauty, but like not in the traditional sense, but in just like you're drawn to it. Just like a feminine aura. That's what I believe in. That's what I love.
Yeah. So Mother Nature-ish.
Mother Nature-ish.
I mean, you can't go... There's a reason Mother Nature...
Literally.
Is a cliche.
It's not Father Nature.
Right. It's not Dad Nature.
Daddy Nature.
No. No, get that. Get that shit out of here. you don't need that. What about rules? Like, for our, what kind of rules, if any, do we have in this?
You cannot pray to yourself.
Okay, no praying to yourself. That's a great one, actually.
Codes of conduct? Our commandments?
Yeah, or, like, we don't have to go through each, like, we don't have to come up with 10 commandments, but, like, can we have sex? Can we dance? Like, what's our, you know?
Yes, you can do both same time.
if you're able to, can do both at the same time.
You're skilled.
Would you want, like, a religion that is more AA-oriented? Like, would you want one that's where substance use is, like, off the table?
No. I think there was a point in time where I got a lot of positive things from my various drug trips or even some drunk times. I learned a lot about myself and actually came to, like, higher plateaus of consciousness that really have stuck with me. But there is also, like, an end point where none of those drugs were giving me that. I think, yeah, of course. I even think, like, drugs and prostitution should all be legal. I really, really believe that. So, of course, everything available to you, prostitution, is, like, something that's not frowned upon.
Yeah. But just... keep it in, like, rein it in, like, just keeping an idea of, like, what's actually, whether it's benefiting you or not, you know?
Yes, you know what I do like still, and I think should be incorporated, is prayer, of course, just, like, consciously talking to your higher power, and letting your higher power work through you.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of not worshiping yourself.
Yeah. And I think for me, because I also had a lot of great things from my times with drugs and drinking and whatnot. I think what it offers us is, I remember the first few experiences, just the realization how your consciousness can be shifted. And like how there, you can't, you're like, when you grow up being sober your whole life, you can get egotistical in a certain way because you just only know your version of reality.
Exactly.
Just the understanding that, like, there are other realities out there. There are other ways to experience that can promote spirituality in a sense because you realize, oh, other people can have a totally different perspective than the one I've always
had.
You know? But then you get, ironically and sadly, I think we both felt this go the other way where you then, it's like, it sort of like turns back in on itself and then becomes like very self-centered with all that stuff. And that's ultimately why I've...
And that's when you stop. That's when you stop.
Just hang up the... You can't keep chasing
those highs.
As Alan Watts would say, once you get the message, you hang up the phone.
That's awesome. That's perfect.
Don't keep calling waiting for somebody to answer.
Oh, I was calling. I was pressing redial.
Like, why isn't anybody fucking picking up? Nobody's picking up.
That's amazing.
Okay, so do we have any texts? Do we have any books that we have in this religion?
God, I don't think so.
No books. That's fine.
No. And the problem with a lot of texts of any religion is that people take every word literally, but literally in their own understanding of it. So, like, I mean, I used to go to church. I heard so many different ways that pastors and preachers would interpret the same line. And it could be any number of ways.
Right.
So it's all skewed on human perception.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, I mean, you hear the same script. Yeah, the same scriptures being used to promote women as pastors and, like, say, though, they should be in the kitchen, you know?
Yeah.
It's the same, like, chapter.
It's just some guy being like, no, he meant it this way, man. He meant it this way that I secretly want it to be. So I don't like that.
Yeah. All right. No text, because that they just make it confusing and leave it up, whatever. Mm-hmm. What about, kind of, like, what would be your ideal, like, worship service? Like, is there music? Is there any kind of, like...
Wow.
Is there, like, a stripper pole? Is
this, yeah, like... there's a stripper pole, yes. I mean, like, when I go to dance classes, the places I've most felt at peace and joy is in dance classes and out in nature. So I would say outdoors, weather permitting. Mm-hmm. Or even if
a pavilion we can have for backup.
Yeah. And... dancing is like a religion in and of
totally
itself.
Is.
And so if that involves a pull up, that involves just the floor, expressing myself through dance brings me closer to like God, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know, it just feels right.
It's direct, it's a much more direct experience than say reading texts that are like that's in a lot of ways language and words separate us from God because it's
like
putting
you look
on
at different
stuff.
Old, I don't know, tribes, and, like, so much of what their worship is dance and music.
Yeah.
And that fills us with joy and, like, serenity and community.
Well, you take, like, the Sufis, who are, like, the hippie Muslims, basically, and they, a big part of their thing is, like, the whirling dervish, right? Like, they just want to, like, a lot of them just dance, and that's all they want to, like, connect to their sense of God through, is just, like, losing themselves.
Losing yourself,
in
losing
dance.
Your ego, losing
exactly.
your self-worship, yeah. exactly.
And that way you do connect to the greater thing.
I think so.
Yeah. What and so does prayer take any part of this? So we're dancing outside.
Yeah.
Are we praying at all? Do we have any kind of moment of silence, any kind
there's
of stillness?
There's dance and music, and then there's stillness. We'll say at the end, because that's when you've, like, let the demons out, and you've, like, shaken yourself free of your ego, and that's when you can talk to your higher power most clearly. Yeah, I like community, maybe... I want to say hand-holding, but... What gets frustrating is, like, the creepy men, so I would keep it a little segregated, men on one side, women on the other side.
Okay, sure.
It really can distract you from your goal.
That's interesting. That's something, too, I've never experienced in the context of a church setting is, like, creepy men factor.
Oh, God, it's the worst. I was just talking to my friend about this today, and I told her one of my earliest memories of church was a creepy one. I grew up around a lot of that, like, finding out pastors were touching the children type shit, and luckily that didn't happen to me, I don't think. But one of my earliest memories was going to a church as a little girl, and the pastor shaking my hand, and he just squeezed it so, so tight, where I remember thinking as a little kid, like, this guy's a predator. As a little kid, I was aware of that. And talk to other women, and there's, like, a lot of those times throughout your life that you start to realize that men are dangerous and predatory, and it's a lot of those times. And even as a little girl, I felt it. And so that is scary. The bad eggs are scary.
Yeah, so we gotta Yeah, you gotta keep them in line.
Keep the
somehow.
Men keep over
them away.
There.
Even in dancing, can we can't trust men to dance.
Well, keep them in their own dance circle.
Yeah,
where they can mosh or whatever they do.
I mean, a righteous mosh circle sounds pretty
like
pretty
in a Christian rock concert.
Yeah. Christian straight edge, like punk.
Oh God, that's the worst.
Actually, well, yeah, it's kind of the worst and kind of the best. I remember back in, like, yeah, when I was, like, in high school, like, in sort of stuff like that, or just, like in going to, like, youth conferences and stuff like that. There, it is, like, so cheesy on some level.
Yes, it is!
But then, like, there can be something very pure and, like, cool about
it.
But it's
fun.
When it works.
And it's, like, aggressive.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally know exactly what you mean, but it's so dorky.
But, like, you're also kind of, in the back of your mind, you're like, this is stupid.
Yeah!
This is so dumb.
Oh, it's so funny.
Yeah.
Teen youth group is just the funniest thing in the world to me. It's such a joke.
Yeah. So just to put it back in, like, would our Mother Nature dancing church, would it have, like, a youth group?
No,
no,
absolutely
not.
No
youth group, no.
You know what I like the best? My spirituality feels best in a room full of women, and I mean women from all ages. I mean women age 1 to aged 100. Like, I draw so much, like, strength and inspiration from other women, and of all ages. Like, it's so rad. I love women, and so I just, all ages in one spot.
I think, yeah, I think, at least to me, and having relationships with women of various ages, they it's always, it's the same with men, too, just people of different ages, you know, there's a vitality and force to people on the younger side, like younger people. But then there's just that wisdom and power that comes from the older
and
generations.
Peace from older
and
people.
Peace, yeah, and like.
Yeah, I think mine would definitely be segregated based on gender.
Yeah.
And the people in the middle can choose, I guess, which side. I'm not sure. I just find a lot more peace when I'm just with my gender.
Yeah. Yeah.
Men can really muddle that for me.
Interesting.
But I also, like, secretly love it, because I, like, am such a flirt, and I love flirting. I don't know. It's just a little mixing.
It's complicated, always, our relationship with the other gender, you know. And that's where, like, yeah, sexuality is, like, it's so at the center of so much of those, like, of complicating it, whether, like, you... For me, it's like you can be so drawn to it, but also simultaneously, it's like so not trust, because you've been burned by it in one way or in different ways. The ways I've been burned by women are not the ways you've been burned by men, but
it's still a burden all the same.
And it's hard to.
That's why I'm trying not to just fall back into sexual patterns in my first year of sobriety, including dating patterns. I want to like break some habits. So that once I am feeling, like, 100% good about myself, I can go back into dating and fucking, but with, like, a better head and better choices.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I love men in that way. Like, I love sex and I love flirting and dating, but I want to do things that are good for me.
Yeah.
And I think, like, that whole spiritual community is, like, the perfect place to meet a lover. I really do, but just keeping that only part of the time.
Yeah, that's totally, that is something that I've thought about too, in terms of like trying to find partners and like just realizing that, oh, maybe church girls were who I should be looking for this whole time after all.
Because you go on Tinder or whatever and you're
what
are these guys?
Yeah, and I think that's what sucks, is like those experiences are so dehumanizing in terms of like so like making you feel like one, like so unworthy of like love and that type of stuff. Because you just internalize how other people treat you like a random... Like or just like a video game character or whatever, or just like we all get objectified.
And I did a lot of objectifying.
Oh, me too, for sure.
Because I wanted to. I felt like that was taking the power back.
It's a defense mechanism. It totally is. To like, well, if I'm going to be like tossed away in whatever ways, then I'm just gonna learn how to game the system better. And this,
yeah,
just...
you become a player.
Yeah,
and then you realize like that's not fun.
No,
it hurts them and it hurts me. Whoa, novel idea.
Yeah, so we've got this. So then it's like we have our. I'm just in this concept of this religion. So we have segregation, but maybe we have a time where we can like
once a week.
Yeah.
It'll be a mixer.
Whoever wants to go to the mixer, they can go, but, like, no flirting outside of that.
Yeah, like...
Just keep it in, boys. Just keep it reined in.
Well, the boys will benefit from being around boys, too.
For sure. Oh, for sure. I think a big thing that I've... this generation of men loses is, like, in a way... I know we We typically
brotherhood
call it
and sisterhood. Brotherhood,
but like true brotherhood, like, and it's like, yeah, like being like male spaces, right? Like it's, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think a lot of people have this idea that, and a rightful idea that we've had like an oppressive history of like male power, and so they don't really trust like all male spaces right now. But then we'd lose. There is something lost when it's because there's like a certain sexuality present anytime there's like men and women both together. Mm-hmm. There's a certain level of like posturing to try to like be
Same thing with women and right. women, and then when women are just in a sisterhood together, we do a lot more growing. It's the same on both sides.
Totally, it totally is. And I love it. You know, some of my happiest memories are just with like all dudes, not
of course
not thinking about it, because you're like a tribe together, like working,
and you're not trying to
goal.
Sexually impress each other. The same thing with women and women.
Yeah,
it's the same exact thing.
Yeah,
and like it's fun and there's no pressure, but it's a different kind of fun when it's mixed, and that's why I think that should be occasional.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not trying to be old-fashioned. I just like love like the growth you can do in that.
Totally,
when you're not just focused constantly on getting laid or finding a boyfriend.
Yeah, and that's part of our. I think growth as a society and generation, it's like, and on my personal level, it's something I've tried to do. It's like, we want to move on and we want to progress from the old-fashioned ways, but we also don't want to throw out everything they learned. We don't need to reinvent the wheel of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah. So
I think a lot of this stuff they did kind of figure out, and then they just
look at the generations above us who are still married for 50 years. I want that. I'm one of few, because I know a lot of people seeking open relationships. But I want that. I want old-fashioned, married forever, fight all the time kind of love. That's what I want, because that's what I grew up with, and I like that.
Yeah.
And I want exclusivity. And I understand that's not everybody, but, like, it works for a lot of people. A partnership, a real partnership, doesn't just have to be, like, oh, we want to fuck all the time. It's like, oh, let's, like, meet in the middle, check our egos, go into our friends and come back to each other and talk it out. Like,
yeah.
I want to work shit out. I do.
Yeah. And yeah, for me, it's like, I want somebody who we sort of have a shared vision or a shared like mission in life, or at least our missions support each other's, you know? And it's like, it's not just about sex, and it's not.
Yeah. I'm tired of that.
It gets old. It's like, it's so funny. The older, like growing up, I guess every generation sort of goes through this. Like, it seems like, when you're younger, you're like, oh, I'm young, I should do whatever I want. And then you just, it's like annoying that it takes you, and like, it just, learning from experience is just annoying. It's like, because there's a part of me, it's like, man, fear, just take this and like keep it when you're 24 or whatever.
Learning from experience is hard. And I feel like our parents try so hard to warn us of certain things, but really, like when I look at it, they have to let us make our own mistakes. I will not learn unless I skin my knees 100 times. Like, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
I'm stupid.
Yeah.
I have to keep falling down, and then I'm like, one day, I stand back up, I'm like, oh, maybe I should, like, walk differently. So I'm not falling down.
And I can already see it now, I am totally gonna be that dad who, while knowing that the more I try to tell him not to do something, the more he probably will do it, I'm still gonna probably try to tell him not to, like, please, just learn! Learn from how I fucked up.
No.
Nope. Please. It's not going to happen.
Gotta let him do it.
It's great. So,
have we made a religion yet, Joe?
I think we're just about there. We have, I guess our sense of, how do we organize our community? Like, do we have, like, a Facebook group for, like, the church? What's the name of this, by the way? What should we name this?
Oh, my gosh. This, like, is hard.
I know, right? Like, Church of Mom.
No! I'm terrible at this. It has to just be something with love.
Yeah.
The love religion, but that just sounds like a cult.
Yeah.
Can I be a cult leader in this?
Yes, you can be.
Can this be a cult?
We don't need to... we don't have to name it if we can't... It should be organic if it should be
Yeah, it's named. Like Prince. It doesn't have a name.
Right. The religion formerly known as Prince.
Yeah, that's the name.
That's actually the name.
That's the name.
So the religion formerly known as Prince... Are we being evangelical at all? Do we try to have any kind of outreach? Do we try to bring people in?
That's the worst part.
Yeah, sort of like a secret gathering.
Not secret, just you can talk about it if somebody asks you about it.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not ever trying to press it on anyone. Mm-hmm. You can only say, I enjoy this.
It's like, hey, we're going to go dance in the woods on Saturday. You're welcome to come if you want.
But you don't have to.
But you don't have to.
But we find a lot of joy in it.
But if you do, no flirting. It's the only thing I ask of you.
This sounds like the coolest religion ever.
Exactly.
You know what a big part of it is, can I add?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Everybody has to bring food. I love food. Gotta bring food.
Fuck yeah.
Snacks.
Homemade food?
Homemade food. Yeah. Because that brings the love.
Yes.
That's like builds a community. When you're making recipes...
Yeah.
And it forces you to set aside time that you're doing something that you're not doing for yourself.
Right.
You're making it for the community.
There was always somebody who brought the bucket of chicken from KFC, that was their only contribution to the potluck. There always was. There wasn't the church potluck. There was although I will say that I was kind of grateful as a kid for that bucket.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, at least we have KFC, if nothing else.
Who doesn't love KFC? So one person can bring KFC.
Right. We'll trade off who gets to bring the KFC. So that, that's...
Straws for a KFC bucket.
Right. And then that way, somebody doesn't have to work for each rotation.
Yeah, that sounds like fun. This sounds like a great, fun religion. I want to be in this religion.
Well, that was the whole goal of this podcast.
Wow, we did it.
We did it. I think we did it. That's it.
High five. I can't believe we just built a religion.
Right from scratch. Thanks so much for coming on. This is
Thanks for having great. Me. I love you.
I love you, too.
I'm so happy that you had me.
I love that we finally recorded one of our religious conversations. Our spiritual talks.
Yeah, me too.
I'm gonna... I feel like I wish I had a catchphrase or something to sign off with.
That's stupid. That's corny.
Join the religion formerly known as Prince. Whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the show, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. If you like Casey, she's on Twitter, she's on Facebook, she's on Instagram. She performs stand-up all around LA. If you like the show, man, do I hope you subscribe. That would be so awesome. Find me on Stitcher and iTunes. Follow me on Facebook, Twitter, all that good stuff. Tell me what you think about the show. Email me at joe@joequint.net. I'll respond to you. If you let me know, I will promise you I will respond to you. I want to hear what you think. And whatever the case, and however stupid some people may think it is, remember, Ja Rule.
What's a Creative Podcast Network?